As the Monahan farm broke into view, Pete Dawkins became agitated.
Hey, you ain't gonna let them Monahans at me, are you? They're crazy. James and that hateful old woman, they'd kill me and not bat an eyelash.
You'll not speak ill of Clemmy Monahan in my presence.
Oh, put a curse on me, why don't you?
I am a minister. I do not practice witchcraft. Any curse that's on you, you put it there yourself.
No one's gonna kill you, Dawkins. Not until the duly appointed time. Then it'll be the army's responsibility.
All the way up from the Shannon farm, Geneva had weighed heavily upon Rusty's mind. She had carried him to the extremes of high anticipation, then of dread. Hearing about her husband's injury had only complicated his feelings. He wondered how well she was coping with what must seem an overabundance of bad luck. He hoped his own hurt had healed enough that he could look at her without falling apart inside. Andy was being stoic, but Rusty could see in his weary eyes that his leg pained him, but only willpower kept him in the saddle.
I've been trying to draw your boy into conversation. He doesn't talk much, does he?
The trip's worn him out. He needs a few days to rest before he goes on.
Goes on to where?
Back to his folks.
Vince Purdy, the grandfather, was the first person Rusty saw. Working in the garden, he paused and leaned on his hoe, staring at the incoming riders. Rusty's attention went to Josie Monahan, picking tomatoes and holding them in her apron. She hurried to the new log house.
Mama! We got company coming!
Clemmy Monahan stepped out past the dog run, shading her eyes with one hand. She beamed at the sight of the minister and gave Rusty a tentative nod. The smile died as she recognized the two prisoners.
Oh, they are not bringing Pete Dawkins into this house.
Evening, Clemmy. Pete's a prisoner. He can't hurt anybody.
But I may hurt him. Put him in the barn out yonder, or the shed, even the root cellar, but not in this house where I've got to look at him.
We'll not trouble you with him any more than we have to, ma'am. But we'll keep him out of your sight.
Lieutenant, you're hurt.
That's not keeping me from doing my job.
But I'm sure it hurts real bad anyway. Come on into the house and we'll see what we can do for you.
I'm obliged, ma'am, but first I have to see to my men and to my prisoners.
I'll help you troopers, Lieutenant. You go with Clemmy. Miss Monahan.
Clemmy put her arms around Webb.
It's good to see you, Warren. Come on in. Josie, go unsaddle Warren's horse for him.
Josie's eyes shone as she stared at Rusty. The glow was infectious. The resemblance to her older sister grew stronger each time he saw her. Clemmy noticed Andy still sitting on his horse.
Oh, get down, boy, and come in. Who is he?
His name's Andy Pickard. I'll explain about him later.
Come on down, Andy.
Rusty, I stay with you.
Sure. You can help me unpack the mule, but be careful about that leg. We'll be coming along directly, Clemmy.
All right.
As Rusty turned, he found Josie standing in front of him, blocking his way.
You staying a while?
It all depends.
You can stay for 100 years, as far as I'm concerned. I was afraid you'd forget about us.
You know I could never forget the Monahans.
Does that include me?
You're a Monahan.
But I'm Josie Monahan. I'm not Geneva.
I hear Geneva's husband got in the way of a bullet again.
He's laid up over in the old house.
How bad is he hurt?
He's in considerable pain, but he'll heal.
And Geneva?
She's in pain, too, for him.
A bad piece of luck for both of them.
But they've got the baby. That makes up for a lot. Geneva had a boy, you know.
Nobody told me.
You'll want to see the baby. It's beautiful.
That's no big surprise. It has a beautiful mother.
And a good-looking daddy. It takes two, you know.
They get along well together, Geneva and Evan?
He worships the ground she walks on. And he should. After all, she's my sister. I'll want my husband to worship the ground I walk on someday.
Then you'd better be careful where you step. There's been horses by here.
Rusty, do you know a safe place where we can hold these prisoners for the night? I expect the lieutenant will want to travel on come morning.
Ought to be a couple of good stout posts you can tie them to in the shed. It may not be comfortable, though.
They ain't got no comfort coming to them.
You wouldn't tie them to a post, would you? I wouldn't be able to sleep at all.
You'll soon be getting all the sleep you ever need. Come on, Carter. I'll let you do the tying.
James Monahan strode into the shed, his face clouded for a storm as he sought out Pete Dawkins. He towered over the bound prisoner.
Pete, I ought to cut your throat right where you're sitting.
You wouldn't kill a helpless man.
He's the army's business now. You dasn't touch him.
I know when I won't. I'd like to. But Pete, I hope they send out invitations to your hanging. I'd ride 500 miles bareback to watch it.
Andy, we'd just as well go too.
Rusty noticed that the braids had slipped from beneath Andy's hat and lay on his shoulders. Bailey's eyes locked onto them.
I seen some light-skinned Indians. Is this boy half Choctaw or something?
Not Choctaw. Comanche.
You ain't fixing to sell him or make a servant of him or something like that, I hope. Lieutenant Ames, he wouldn't stand still for nothing of that kind.
Andy's white, but the Comanches raised him. He wants to go back to him. I'm helping him get there.
It truth.
I'd sooner you didn't say anything to the lieutenant.
There ain't nothing slow about Lieutenant Ames. He sees things for himself.
We've been afraid the army might try to take Andy and send him to a reservation or maybe an orphanage. Something like that.
As long as this is what he really wants.
I want to go home.
Then I don't see where the army's got any business messing around with him. And I don't think Lieutenant Ames would either.
The other soldier listened, but never spoke. Rusty judged that he had come out of slavery, where no one had asked his opinion or even considered that he might have one. Whatever suited Sergeant Bailey would suit him too. Rusty had to walk by the old log house to get to the newer one where most of the family lived. Andy limped along beside him. Geneva stood in the open dog run. Rusty stopped in mid-stride, looking at her. All the old pain returned for a moment, all the burning inside. He touched his fingers to the brim of his hat.
Howdy, Geneva. You're looking real fine.
You brought in Pete Dawkins.
The soldiers brought him in. Preacher and Andy and me, we just came with the soldiers.
I hope they had to shoot him a little, the way he shot Evan.
I'm afraid they didn't, but the army will give him what he's got coming.
Rusty, I'd like you to see my baby.
Well, sure.
Evan Gifford lay on a bed, his legs covered by a blanket. His arm was heavily bandaged.
Look who just came, Evan.
Heard you brought in Pete Dawkins.
The soldiers did. I had nothing to do with catching him.
I was looking him square in the eye when he got me in the arm here. Another second I've shot him instead of him shooting me. But at least we gave him a good scrap and we didn't let him get our horses.
Rusty remembered his earlier favorable judgment of Evan Gifford. Geneva had married a fighter. Try as he might, he just couldn't find something to hate about him.
Hey, seen our baby yet?
Geneva was fixing to show me.
Well, he's right here.
The baby lay in a small, handmade wooden crib. Geneva beamed as she lifted a corner of a blanket to reveal the tiny reddish face.
Ever seen a prettier one in your life?
I can't say as I've seen that many.
I think he's got Evan's face. Some of the family say he has my eyes. What do you think?
I'd have to study him a while.
The baby's blue eyes were open, but did not seem to be focused on anything in particular. Geneva kissed its tiny forehead.
It's about time for feeding. I'd invite you to stay, Rusty, but it's not exactly a public event.
No, I'd expect not.
He tried not to allow himself the mental picture, but it came nevertheless.
Me and Andy, we'll be going on.
He paused at the door for one more look at Geneva. She began unbuttoning her dress from the top. He turned quickly away.
Baby has red face like Comanche baby.
I think that's the way they all look at first.
Pretty woman. Why don't you have woman?
Josie stood in front of the new house, waiting.
You saw Geneva and the baby. I can tell by the look on your face.
She did not have to say what she was thinking. He could read it in her eyes.
I never had any claim on her. She's married now and to a good man. I'm happy about that.
You just haven't made up your mind to turn her loose yet. But you will. And when you do, I'll be here.
You deserve better than to be a substitute for somebody else, Josie.
I'll settle for that at first. But I think I could make a man forget he had ever wanted anybody besides me.
I doubt I'd be that man.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Andy looked from one to the other. It was obvious he had no idea what they were talking about.
Huh?
I think that came from the shed.
Damn it! Bailey, are you okay?
Oh, it's fine, Lieutenant Ames. tell Ames that them prisoners got away.
Exploring with his fingers, Rusty found the point of a nail protruding through the post to which Pete Dawkins had been tied. Webb's lighted lantern revealed frayed fragments of rope, indicating that Pete had rubbed his bonds against the nail until he had worried his way through them and freed his hands.
Sergeant Bailey, what happened?
Private Cotter was on guard. Must be he went to sleep, or maybe Dawkins was just too sneaky for him. Busted him over the head with the shovel yonder, and then he busted me before I could get my rifle.
Damn it! I'd have stood guard on them myself. Damn little sleep the shoulders let me get anyway.
Him and his partner, they got off with our guns.
Private Cotter would never stand court-martial for losing his prisoners. He was dead.
Probably never knew what hit him.
Thought he'd kill me too, like as not. He didn't know how hard my head is.
It's two of my soldiers he owes the army for.
I just drove the horses back to the pen. Hell of a diversion. Pete owes this family too, Ames. More than he could pay in 100 years. I'll get him, Lieutenant. Rusty, you going with me or not?
I'll be ready in 2 minutes.
It'll take me 5. Preacher, how about you saddling my dun horse for me while I run back to the house and get my gun?
It's a long time until daylight. You can't see the tracks.
I know the first place he'll head for. If me and Rusty don't find him there, at least we'll have that much advantage when the sun comes up.
While Rusty caught Alamo, Webb saddled James's horse. Sergeant Bailey saddled and mounted his own leggy black.
Yeah. Pete fetched you a bad lick with that shovel. You've got no business riding.
I don't ride on my head. You said you know where he's going? Let's be getting started.
Rusty, I go too?
Rusty wondered about the instinct that had awakened the boy. Perhaps he had heard something, but did not realize it. Or perhaps his time with the Comanches had given him some sort of sixth sense.
No, you stay here. You keep off that leg as much as you can, and don't go any place till I come back.
Rusty and James did not have to compare notes. Both guessed Pete's first destination would be his father's farm. Even granted that the old man had disowned him and thrown him off the place, Pete would probably go there for fresh horses, and likely as not, to take any money his father might have. In time of trouble, he had always run to Colonel Dawkins.
We can go faster. I ain't so bad hurt.
We've got to think about the horses. We're liable to have to chase Pete a lot farther than his daddy's place.
He's bound to figure somebody's grabbing at his shirt tails. I've been making all the tracks he can.
Scully kept looking over his shoulder into the darkness.
I tell you, I've been hearing something.
You hear your own cowardly heart beating. Ain't nothing behind us but a whippoorwill and an owl or two. We killed both them nigger guards. Ain't nobody gonna miss us till daylight.
And what are we pushing these horses so hard for? I feel mine giving out under me already.
We'll get fresh ones from the old man. And we'll head up north into the nations. Won't nobody find us.
There's lots of Indians up there. Some of them are apt to remember when we borrowed horses from them.
Them Indians don't know one white man from another. We could tell them we're Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee. They wouldn't know the difference.
As many times as we've run from Indians, I ain't none too keen about going up there amongst them.
We'll stay where the peaceful ones are, the Cherokees and the Choctaws and such. We won't have no truck with the Comanches. Who knows? We might even set ourselves up as horse traders. Instead of borrowing Indian horses out of the nations and selling them into Texas, we take Texas horses up into the nations.
Evening up the score?
Sure. We'd be the Indians' friends. And in return, they'd protect us if anybody came snooping around.
Well, sounds good. But there's still many a mile between us and the nations. How you know your old man will give us anything? Last time he was fixing to shoot us both. If we stayed 5 more minutes, he would've.
He's about done. You notice how he's shrunk up lately? Losing Mama, losing the war. It's took the guts out of him. We won't ask for nothing. We'll just take what we want. He can't do nothing about it, the shape he's in.
He ain't too weak to pull a trigger.
But the will to do it ain't in him anymore.
Dawn was only a pink streak across the eastern sky when they rode into the Dawkins corrals. Pete's heart jumped as he caught a flash of light, but soon realized it was just one of the house servants already doing the morning milking.
It's only old Jethro. Ought to be a couple of night horses in the pen yonder. Let's go get him.
You don't reckon he'd have a gun, do you?
Jethro wouldn't know which end the shot comes out of. Get a hold of yourself.
I guess I'm nervous being this close to your old man. I can't help but remember how he was when we hanged them two Monahans. Never saw a man so cold and hard. Scared the hell out of me.
Used to scare me too. But no more. Ain't nothing left of him but a hollow husk. A good strong wind could blow him plumb away. All right. Looks like he's got two horses to spare. Switch saddles, Scully.
Hey, you're getting the strongest for yourself. This one don't look like he'd go all the way to Nations. Look if he gets across the county line.
Oh, stop your belly aching and throw your saddle on him. If we come across a better one somewhere, we'll make a swap.
The lantern came bobbing along, its faint light dancing off the corral fence. A dark figure climbed up onto the second rail and held the lantern at arm's length.
Who you all? What you doing here?
It's just me and Scully. We're trading horses.
Moss Pete? Old Colonel ain't gonna be pleased. You remember what he told you? Did he shoot you if you was ever back here?
Well, I'm back just the same. You go on up to the house and muster him out. Tell him I want all the victuals me and Scully can pack behind our saddles. And any cash money he's got in the house. We'll be there as soon as we finish saddling up.
Old Colonel, he sure ain't gonna be pleased.
Right there is proof enough that the Yankees are crazy. Setting the slaves free. Jethro was starved to death like an old pet dog if he didn't have somebody to feed him and tell him what to do. When Papa dies, when he loses this place, what's gonna become of people like Jethro?
I'm more worried about what's gonna become of me and you. Army's got a long memory.
For them darky soldiers? I'll bet none of them could even sign their name to the company roster. They'll be forgotten about before we get to the Nations.
Scully's nervousness had been getting under Pete's skin. Even after Pete had freed himself from his bonds and had broken the first guard's head with a shovel, Scully had been whimpering that they would never get away, that they were sure to be hanged for what Pete had done. Pete didn't want to talk when he could ride. Though it was a short distance from the corrals to the big house, he mounted the fresh horse he had just taken. Scully followed along, leading his. Caleb Dawkins met them at the door, standing in it to block their entry. He seemed smaller now than Pete had remembered him. He had lost weight, his clothes hanging loose. His shoulders had a tired slump as if he carried a heavy yoke.
I told you the last time, Pete. You're no longer welcome in this house.
Jethro tell you what I want?
He told me. I have nothing here for you. Go, before I summon all the hands and have you forcibly thrown off this place.
You better not summon anybody you wouldn't want to see dead.
Pete flourished the army rifle.
You're standing in my way, old man. I'm coming in.
Pete felt exhilarated at his sense of new power. For most of his life, his father had only to give him a fierce look, and Pete would shrink away. Colonel did not even have to say anything.
I told Jethro to sack up some grub. Where's it at?
I told him to forget it. If you came empty-handed, you'll leave the same way.
Damn you, old man. You owe me something. I'm your son.
A fact that a heavy heart has brought me to regret.
Scully, go on yonder and see what you can find. Hurry up. You keep telling me how poor you are, but I believe you still got money stashed away. I want it.
All the money I had went to the cause, you know that.
I just know you told me that, but I think you lied. Now, where have you got it?
It's a sorry state you come to, Pete. That you'd rob your own father. I'm only glad your mother isn't here to see how low you've let yourself sink. You're on the run again, aren't you?
It's none of your concern if I am. You've already disowned me, so what difference does it make?
What'd you do? Steal some more horses?
Killed some nigger soldiers is all.
So now you've moved up to higher crimes. You've added murder to the list.
It ain't murder killing a nigger. Country's overrun with them as it is.
But if they were soldiers, the Federals won't rest till they put a noose around your neck.
There was thousands of soldiers killed in the war. What's a few more, especially with them being black? Now where's that money at?
You'll find a metal box in the bottom of my desk yonder.
I knew it, old man. Where is it? Come on, come on. Ah! Yes! So much Confederate money! It's Confederate! Every damn bit of it! Where's the real money, old man?
That's it. That's all there is.
You fool! You damn old fool! You're richer than Croesus! You let her go to hell for a crazy notion.
Not crazy. You wouldn't call it crazy if we'd won. I remember when you were 8 and you took diphtheria. You would have died, but your mother and I would not allow it. Better you had died an innocent boy than to become what you are.
Hurry up, Scully. We gotta be moving.
All right, but there ain't much. Bacon, cold bread, no coffee.
It'll do. Meet you outside.
Find any money? Pete?
Mount up, Scully. We're leaving. Let's ride. Yeah!
Scully had trouble keeping up. He struggled to tie the sack of food with his saddle strings while his own mount rushed ahead.
For God's sake, Pete!
Pete let his horse run a mile or so before he slowed to an easier lope, then a long trot. Scully caught up, complaining as usual.
You all kill these horses!
We lost some time back there. We need to make it up now.
How far back you reckon the army is?
With nobody left but that lieutenant, and he took my bullet in his shoulder.
But there's them Monahans, especially that James and Rusty Shannon. They'd kill us on sight, give them half a chance.
I wish you shut up. You trying to turn me into a coward too?
Scully's fears were beginning to get to him, though he hoped it did not show. Scully would probably go limp as a rag doll if he saw that Pete was weakening. What little strength the man had left, he was borrowing from Pete. After a time, Pete began to sense his horse's stride becoming more labored. He knew he should slow down, but Scully's fear was infectious. He decided to stop at the top of the next hill and look back. If no pursuers were visible, they would rest the horses. His horse never made it to the hill. He stepped in a badger hole.
Pete! Well, you hurt, Pete?
I'm all right. Catch my horse, then let him get away.
Well, he ain't going no place. He's crippled.
The animal lay on its side, feebly kicking one leg in the air.
Ah, damn stupid horse!
He was angry enough to shoot the animal, but his rifle lay on the ground where the fall had spilled it. Legs wobbly, Pete walked over and picked up the weapon. He saw that the barrel was clogged with dirt. Firing it would be dangerous. It might explode in his hands.
Well, what are we gonna do now? Your horse ain't fit to go on. If we try to ride this one double, we'll break it down before we get to the river.
We won't ride it double. Get down, Scully.
Get down? What for?
Because I said so. Get down.
Pete?
I said get down. Now back up. I'm taking your horse.
But what about me?
What about you? I'm sick of your bitching and complaining. I ought to have left you behind a long time ago.
What'll I do?
You'll walk like hell if you know what's good for you. Run if you can. I'll find you a hole somewhere and pull it in after you.
Oh, no, Pete! You can't leave me to hang. They'll find me for sure. Our tracks are clear as day. You're leaving me to die, Pete! Come back!
Rusty didn't know what to expect as he rode into the Dawkins place. Several of the colonel's field hands were gathered in front of the big house. They seemed heavily burdened.
We're looking for Pete Dawkins. You all seen him pass this way?
He done come and gone. Him and that Scully. Caught fresh horses, left yonder way.
North? How long ago?
Right smart a while. Ain't got no watch.
Didn't say where he was headed?
Didn't say nothing much to any of us. Might have said something to the colonel. I wouldn't know.
Maybe we better go talk to the colonel.
I'm afraid you're too late. Ain't nobody gonna be talking to the colonel. Not ever again. He dead.
Pete killed him?
No, sir. Pete knocked him down. Colonel never got up. Had him a heart seizure after Pete left. Wasn't nothing I could do for him. He was gone before I could even finish saying the Lord's Prayer.
Rusty looked at James. In view of the long enmity and the fact that Dawkins had hanged his father and brother, Rusty expected James to be glad. Instead, he seemed regretful.
I've thought of 100 ways for the old devil to die and wish for every one of them. This way never crossed my mind.
We're sitting here,
He's traveling.
He'd better travel. Just one good shot at him, that's all I ask for. Just one good shot.
We need to bring him in alive.
We didn't promise that. You told the lieutenant we'd bring him back either in the saddle or tied across it. If I can get just one good shot, he'll be across it.
James! Sergeant Bailey, I didn't know...
Man's gonna die anyway. The way I see it, why not save the army some money?
Let's go then.
The tracks were easy to follow, for Pete had made no apparent effort to hide them. They indicated that his and Scully's horses had run hard for the first mile or so, then slowed.
They're heading due north, heading for the Red River the quickest way they can.
Probably think they'll be safe when they get to the Nations. They've stolen way too many Indian horses. If any of them so-called friendlies recognize them, their lives won't be worth a Confederate dollar.
They came at length upon a crippled horse, standing with its head down. It turned away, trying to move on three legs.
Pete and Scully must be riding double. Well, they're as good as dead now. They just break everything they touch.
Wait!
This horse is lame, Rusty. Just putting it out of its misery.
No, look. I don't think its leg is broke. More sprain, maybe.
You know you may be right.
James removed the saddle and bridle, dropping them to the ground so the horse could move unencumbered. A little farther on, a man afoot spotted them about the same time they saw him. He began to run, stumbling, falling, getting up, and running again.
That's Pete.
James spurred ahead of Rusty and Bailey, his pistol in his hand. Rusty soon saw that the fugitive was Scully.
Stop, Scully!
Scully darted to the left.
Damn!
Scully darted back to the right. Scully dropped to his knees.
Don't shoot me! I never killed nobody.
Where's Pete?
He crippled his horse. He took mine and went on, bound for the Nations.
Just like we figured.
How far ahead is he?
I don't know. An hour, maybe two.
By the tracks, he's been pushing hard.
He don't care if he kills a horse. He just cares about getting away.
Rusty beckoned James and Bailey to one side.
What do we do about Scully? Anybody want to stay and watch him?
I vote we shoot him right here.
Now, the lieutenant would be right put out about that. Anyway, it's the other one we want the most.
All right. Scully?
Yes?
We're going after Pete. You start walking back to the Dawkins place. We'll pick you up there.
How do we know he won't keep walking?
Because he knows the army will hunt him down and hang him like a sheep-killing dog.
I never killed nobody. It was all Pete. Army's got no call to hang me.
Then you wait for us at Dawkins. Maybe Sergeant Bailey will testify for you.
Scully looked back and forth between Rusty and Bailey and trembled.
You tell him it was Pete done it all. You tell him I didn't do nothing to get hanged for.
I'll tell him what I know. I can't do no better than that.
Following Pete's trail was not a heavy challenge. Even the few times Rusty temporarily lost it, James or Sergeant Bailey quickly picked it up again. There was no mistaking Pete's intention. He was headed for the Red River as directly as the terrain would allow him to travel. And there was no mistaking James's intention. He meant to kill Pete on sight. The fierce look in his eyes made a chill run down Rusty's back.
There's no telling what we may run into if we have to follow him over to the other side.
He had become acutely aware that they had left in too much of a hurry to be concerned about supplies. Hunger was beginning to gnaw at him. He suspected Bailey was running a fever, though the sergeant had not complained. But James had a determined look that said he would follow Pete across hell and out the far side if he had to.
We promised the lieutenant we'd bring him in.
You promised him, I didn't. We'd bring him back alive, there's too many ways he can cheat the hangman. Bring him in dead and there won't be no appeal, no bond, no parole.
Even Pete Dawkins deserves his chance in court.
You still talk like a ranger. There ain't no rangers anymore. You're just another civilian, same as me.
Rusty thought back on his former ranger commanders, August Burmeister, and later Captain Whitfield. Badly as they might have hated a man like Pete Dawkins, they would have made every reasonable effort to bring him in for a jury's judgment rather than impose judgment of their own.
I guess I'm still a ranger at heart. If they're ever reorganized, I'll be the first in line to join up.
Fine. but I'm not burdened with all that righteousness. If I get Pete in my sights, I'll kill him.
Sergeant?
All I promised was that we'd bring him back. I didn't say what shape he'd be in.
They came at last to the river. The sign indicated that they were not far behind Pete. Horse droppings were still fresh. The rust-colored river was at low ebb, much of its water running unseen beneath the red sands. Only one narrow channel toward the center of the broad riverbed showed a current. The tracks were deep and bold. Rusty took a deep breath, fighting back dread. He had crossed this river more than once farther west. His experiences on the other side had invariably been unpleasant. This time, he felt, would be no different.
All right, let's be after him.
The horse's feet sank deeply into the wet sand and made a sucking sound as they lifted for each next step. The tracks almost instantly filled with water behind them. The three men had crossed only a quarter of the wide riverbed when James stopped.
Somebody's coming yonder!
Help! Help me, please!
On the north side of the river, a rider came pushing his horse for all the speed he could summon. A dozen horsemen were in close pursuit.
That's Pete, my God!
Looks like he's roused up half the nations.
Oh, God! Help! Help me!
Pete plunged his horse into the shallow water. He hammered his boots against the animal's ribs and looked back over his shoulder. Rusty knew he had taken a rifle from Bailey, but he evidently no longer had it. He must have dropped it in his panicked flight.
Help me! God says help me!
I'll help you. I'll shoot you right where you're at.
James, no. The Indians will think you're shooting at them. There's way too many for us to tackle.
The Indians rode into the river after Pete, rapidly gaining on him.
Oh, God! I didn't do nothing! I swear! They just saw me and attacked! You gotta help me! Rusty! James! Please!
Midway across, the Indians overtook Pete and circled around him. Pete's horse broke free and splashed toward the three men on the south edge of the river. Pete was not on him.
They're liable to come for us next.
He raised his rifle again but did not point it. Three men might cut down some of the Indians but could not get them all. Rusty shivered, not from cold. The Indians turned back toward the north bank, still yelling in triumph. Behind them, half buried in the wet sand, lay a lifeless lump. The river ran redder as it moved around and past Pete Dawkins. The three watched in silence as the Indians moved northward.
We promised the lieutenant we'd bring him back.
I'm afraid there ain't enough left of him to take back.
I'm gonna pick up Pete's horse. We'll need it for Scully.
They did not look again at whatever remained of Pete Dawkins. Lieutenant Ames walked 50 yards out to meet them as they rode up to the Monahan farm. He gave Scully only a quick glance.
I don't see Dawkins. Did he get away?
No, he didn't get away.
You killed him then?
We didn't. He ran into some old Indian acquaintances. They saved the army some time and money.
He glanced toward James.
They have kept some other folks out of trouble, too.
At least you brought back this one.
We'll want to talk to you about him, but we can do that later. Everything been all right here while we were gone?
Fine. Your Comanche boy's a lot stronger. Evan Gifford was out of bed this morning walking around. And it appears there is to be a wedding in the family.
A wedding?
Clemmy and your Minister Webb have decided to throw in their lot together.
Been a while coming.
Everybody's known him for a long time. Everybody but them.
They unsaddled the horses and walked to the house. Andy stood just past the dog run, Josie a step behind him. Andy came down to meet Rusty halfway across the yard. He barely showed a limp.
I'm strong now. Rusty, I'm ready to go.
Rusty wished he could think of a new argument against it, but they had already talked the subject to death without any weakening that he could see on Andy's part.
All right. Tomorrow, then.
Tomorrow?
I've argued myself hoarse, but a promise is a promise.
You'll be coming back?
I will, I promise. I wouldn't want to miss seeing Preacher and Clemmy get married.
Maybe that'll give you some notions of your own.
I'm dry to my toes. Reckon there's some coffee in the kitchen?
If there isn't, I'll make some. Come on in the house.
Directly across the Red River lay the Indian reservations. But Rusty knew Andy's band was unlikely to be there, submitting themselves to military supervision and agency regulations. They would range free, farther west, on the Texas plains, wherever the buffalo grazed. Time had come for the autumn hunt to lay in meat for the long winter ahead. Rusty and Andy were 3 days out from the Monahan farm. Andy left his white man clothing behind. He was back in his Comanche breechcloth, as he had been when Rusty first saw him, bow and quiver slung over his shoulder. The two had taken their time, sparing the horses, watching for sign of hunting activity. They had begun encountering buffalo in scattered herds, but they saw no indications of slaughter. Though Indians typically utilized virtually all of a carcass, they left enough remnants on the killing and skinning ground to show they had been there.
There ain't really that many Comanches when you spread them around over a country as big as this. And landmarks? Ain't many of them either. Are you sure you can really find your people?
They have many camping grounds. I know them all. You bet I find them.
Andy's use of the language had improved in the days he had spent with the Monahans. Rusty attributed that to coaching by Josie and Alice. But Andy said old Vince Purdy had shown a strong interest in him, too. He had taken the boy hunting and fishing and taught him a little about managing the garden.
Monahans are good people. You find there's lots of fine folks like them if you give us a chance to show you.
He knew he had little chance of changing the boy's mind, but he had not given up trying. He would not give up until Andy rode off and left him. Rusty had already ridden farther than he had intended, hoping for something that might turn Andy around.
You enjoyed yourself at the Monahans, didn't you?
Much. They make me remember more. I remember better now my mama and daddy. The Monahans much the same, mama and daddy.
If your real folks could talk to you now, they'd say you belong with your own kind. They'd tell you to stay with us.
They come to me in a dream, but they do not talk. My brother come to me in same dream, say I come back to Comanches. I hear my brother.
Andy pointed to the buzzards, circling far to the west. This was almost the time of year when they would begin drifting southward, but no chilly northers had prodded them yet with the first hint of winter. The buzzards were at such a distance that Rusty had not noticed them. Andy had a keener eye, or perhaps a more highly developed sensitivity to the subtle messages of nature.
How'd you know they were there? I can barely see them, even after you pointed them out to me.
The spirits, I guess. Somehow, I know.
The spirits telling you anything else?
They say my people somewhere over there. They kill buffalo. They say it is time you turn back, or maybe my people kill you.
Several times Andy had demonstrated that he possessed instincts beyond Rusty's understanding, an ability to sense presences he could not see.
I can't just ride off and leave you by yourself.
But it is what you said. We talked much about it.
Talking about it ahead of time is one thing, but it's different when you get there and face having to do it. I'll always feel like I abandoned you.
Abandoned? You keep promises all.
Damn poor promise the more I think about it. Maybe we ought to ride over there and have a look. It may not be a buffalo kill after all.
I wish you'd turn back now.
Just a little farther, Andy.
It was fully a mile to where the buzzards floated about. Two dark gray wolves skulked away as the horsemen approached. The wind carried an unmistakable smell of rotting flesh. Scattered over a couple of hundred yards of ground were the leavings of a buffalo kill. Heads, blood, intestines strung out by scavengers. Straight lines marked where travois had been used to haul the meat and hides. Rusty slapped at flies that buzzed around his face.
Let's get away from here.
They circled around upwind, away from the flies and the stench.
Looks like we found your people, or at least where they've been.
I find them easy now. Better you go.
Rusty felt a catch in his throat as he faced Andy.
This is a lot harder than I figured. If you ever decide you want to change, you know where I live.
Andy pointed southeastward, where a scrub timber lined a small creek.
You go to trees. Hide till dark.
Rusty's eyes burned as he turned away and touched spurs gently to Alamo's hide. When he had first found Andy, he had no thought that he would ever become so attached to the boy. He had assumed that relatives would soon come and fetch Andy away, and that would be the end of it. Rusty was, after all, a bachelor, lacking in experience, helpful in raising a youngster beyond what he could remember of his own raising by Daddy Mike and Mother Dora. He tried not to look back, but he couldn't help it. What he saw made his heart leap. Andy was racing toward him. Behind Andy, Comanche warriors were running their horses hard. Andy was waving wildly. The message was plain enough. Run for the timber. Rusty put Alamo into a lope as Andy drew abreast of him.
Didn't your spirits tell you about them?
Don't talk. Run.
But they're your people. What are you running for?
For you. We get to trees. I turn back. Talk to them. Out here they kill you first. Then they talk.
The timber was thin, for the creek was narrow and barely running. Rusty jumped to the ground and grabbed his rifle.
Don't shoot. They kill you, sure.
Rusty knew it would be futile to fight. He might knock down two or three, but they would have him in a minute. Still, he wanted them to know he could. He wanted each warrior to contemplate the possibility that he might be one of the unlucky two or three. The Indian stopped short of the timber and spread out in a ragged line.
You don't shoot. I go talk.
You better talk real good.
Rusty could feel the pulse pounding in his neck. Dust choked him. He had to struggle for breath as he watched Andy ride out toward the Indians, one hand held high. The line contracted as the warriors drew back together to receive him. It soon became obvious that most recognized him. They greeted him as one lost and returned from the dead. Rusty began to breathe easier, but it was one thing for them to accept Andy. He was a blood brother. Rusty was a blood enemy. The conference continued a while, then Andy turned and rode back toward Rusty. His face was grim. Rusty's hopes sagged. Andy regarded him a moment before he spoke.
I tell them what you do for me. They say they don't kill you yet. They want counsel first.
What would you give for my chances?
Tunkwa Killer is very bad man. He wants to kill you now. Others say wait. Talk to my brother. My brother will help.
I take it your brother's not here, but Tunkwa Killer is.
My brother hunts. We'll be in camp tonight.
Rusty weighed his options and found them dismal. If he broke and ran, he would be lucky to get 200 yards. To fire into that bunch would amount to the same quick suicide.
I'll go along, I guess.
Give me rifles so they know you don't fight.
The minute I turn loose of this rifle, I'm helpless.
You helpless now.
Here. Yeah. You were right, Andy. I ought to have turned back yesterday, but I just couldn't.
Not be scared, my brother Fix. You see that one? He Tunkwa Killer. Always hates me. Calls me Texan boy. Wants me dead. When I break my leg, Tunkwa Killer there. Says it is good I die. Hit me with war club.
He don't look happy to see you back.
Afraid of my brother. He thinks I tell.
You're going to, aren't you?
First, I hear him talk. Then, maybe I tell. Follow these four. Others go hunt some more. These take us to camp. Wait for my brother.
Rusty knew this was a mistake of his own doing, yet he knew he would take the same risk again if he felt it necessary for Andy. The Indian camp was bustling with activity. Women were cutting buffalo meat into strips to be dried on racks hastily constructed of limbs and branches from trees along a nearby stream. Others cleaned the flesh from buffalo hides to be turned into robes and clothing and teepee coverings. Several women came and made a fuss over Andy. Everyone in camp seemed to know him. From their reactions, Rusty knew they had considered him forever lost. Only Tunkwa Killer appeared displeased at the boy's apparent resurrection from among his forefathers. If hate-filled looks could kill, Andy would have died 100 times. The women brought freshly cooked meat. Andy accepted it with pleasure. He motioned for Rusty to join him. The meat was not thoroughly cooked, but Rusty was too hungry to be choosy. The first hunting party arrived a while before sundown. They were empty-handed, and they weren't pleased about it.
My brother is with others. He comes soon.
There was no mistaking the arrival of Steele's the ponies. Apparently, he had been told of Andy's return, for he raced ahead of the other hunters and galloped into camp without regard for the dust he raised or the roasting meat that had settled upon. Andy ran to him, showing but little of his limp. They threw their arms around each other. Rusty had long been told that Indian men were too stoic to cry. He saw that he had been misinformed. Steele's the ponies pushed Andy out to arm's length, tears in his eyes, and looked him over from head to foot as if he could not believe what he saw. Though Rusty was too far to hear their conversation, Andy seemed ecstatic. He pointed to his leg, showing where it had been broken. Tonkawa killer broke into the joyous reunion. He pointed his finger at Andy, his posture accusatory. Whatever he said, it aroused anger and denial from Andy. Steele's the ponies turned towards Tonkawa killer in such a way that it seemed the quarreling men were about to come to blows. Steele's the ponies pushed himself in front of Andy and took a protective stance. Tonkawa killer pointed again, then turned on his heel and stalked away. Several warriors followed him, evidently taking his side of the argument. Cold dread settled in the pit of Rusty's stomach. Andy led his brother to where Rusty sat. Rusty stood up, trying to look as if he had no concern. Steele's the pony stepped close and lifted Rusty's hat from his head. His eyes widened.
Andy, what's he looking at?
Your hair. It is red. My brother says red hair, big medicine.
Is that good or bad?
Good for me. You saved me. My brother and me take you out of camp. We ride with you till you are safe from Tonkawa killer.
I am much obliged. I'm ready to start any time he is.
Steele's the ponies nodded his head to several of the hunters, who quickly left. They returned with Rusty's and Andy's horses. Steele's the ponies made a motion for Rusty to mount.
Yeah. Better get me my rifle, Andy.
Andy fetched it, but handed it to Steele's the ponies.
Better my brother hold it. Give back when all is good.
Rusty felt naked and vulnerable without the rifle, but this was no time to bog down in details.
Sun'll be gone pretty soon. I want to put a lot of miles behind me while it's dark.
Rusty was relieved when he put the sight and smoky smell of the Indian camp behind him. He kept looking back, half expecting Tonkawa killer to build his nerve and come in pursuit. He suspected Steele's the ponies had the same suspicion, but the Indian also kept watching their back trail. They had ridden perhaps 3 miles. The sun was at the horizon line, the shadows long and dark across the open buffalo prairie. Ahead lay the same narrow creek in which Rusty and Andy had taken refuge from the first set of hunters. The line of small timber looked black against the sun-gilded grass. Somehow Rusty felt that the creek was far enough from camp to be a safe haven. Beyond it, he should be all right. Steele's the ponies reined up and turned to Andy. Rusty saw alarm in both their eyes, though so far he had seen no reason for it. 4 Comanches rode up out of the creek bottom and stopped in a line. At one end, Tonkawa killer brandished a lance. Evidently, they had circled around without allowing themselves to be seen.
Andy, they're going to attack. Tell your brother to use my rifle.
No.
No?
My brother cannot shoot Tonkawa killer. Comanche does not kill Comanche. You can.
There's 3 more besides him.
They not fight. Come only to see.
Steele's the ponies tossed Rusty his rifle. Rusty threw the breech open. He felt a jolt as he saw that the chamber was empty. One of the Comanches had removed the cartridge. He fumbled in his pocket for another. Tonkawa killer started the charge. Rusty had trouble fishing out a cartridge while trying to watch the Comanche rushing at him. He saw the lance point bobbing, a dark scalp hanging from the shaft. He knew he was too slow. It happened so quickly that Rusty barely realized what had happened. Tonkawa killer lay on the ground, the tip of an arrow sticking out of his chest. Andy's face was pale as he looked at what he had done.
My God, Andy!
The 3 Comanches at the creek seemed ready to charge, but Steele's the ponies simply shook his head. The message was clear. Steele's the ponies would handle this situation. 2 of the Indians dismounted and picked up the body. The 3rd went after Tonkawa killer's horse. Casting hateful glances at Andy and Rusty, the Comanches laid the lifeless warrior across the animal's back and led him toward camp. Steele's the ponies watched them closely, his eyes grave. Andy's hands shook uncontrollably. He could not take his eyes from the small pool of blood where the downed warrior had lain. He had never killed a man. That he had done it now, and that the man he killed was Comanche, filled him with horror. Steele's the ponies placed his hands on Andy's shoulders.
It is an awful thing you have done, little brother.
He was about to kill Rusty.
Now his brothers must try to kill you. They will return Tonkawa killer to camp, but they will certainly strike at you if given the chance. You chose a Texan over your own. From now on, you will be an outcast.
He took care of me. I could not let him die.
It is easy to watch an enemy die. It takes a brave man to stand aside and allow it to happen to a friend. But sometimes it must be done.
Rusty risked his life to bring me home.
This is no longer your home. It never can be again.
What can I do?
You were born white. We made you Comanche. Now you must be white again. By what name does your red-haired friend call you?
Andy. The name my mother and father gave me.
You are Badger Boy no more. You must be Andy now. And for however long you live.
Andy placed a hand against his heart.
I will always be Badger Boy. I will always be Comanche.
Steals the ponies embraced him.
To me, you will always be Badger Boy. But to the others, it will be as if you never lived. You must never return here. Go now, you and the red hair. Go far while the night can hide you. Go, forget.
I will not forget.
Then remember what is good in Comanche ways, but find your place in the white man's world.
Steals the ponies remounted his horse and rode off into the dusk. Shoulders sagging, Andy watched him until he disappeared.
Andy.
My brother says I must go with you now. I go with you or I die.
Rusty knew it was his fault. Reluctant to cut the tie with Andy, he had ridden too far into a hostile land.
Andy, I'm sorry.
Too big to cry.
Sometimes it's the best thing you can do.
My brother says I must be white now.
Again, Andy placed his hand against his heart.
But here, always part of me will be Comanche.
And you'll never be sure who you really are, Rusty thought darkly. He knew, for he had been there.
Soon be dark. We go long way in dark.
A very long way, Andy. But I'll be here with you.
Texas Rangers Badger Boy is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2001, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Tony Nam, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Catherine Aselford, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Nanette Savard, Johan Detweiler, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Drew Copas, Mort Shelby, and Bobby Aselford. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Brian Patton. Graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld. Adapted for graphic audio by Dan Sondak. With original music by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Texas Rangers, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man and The Last Gunfighter. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in graphic audio.
In the survivalist's world, rest is nothing more than a dying star in the black hole of war.
Paul! No good, John!
They are crashing!
Get hard!
My men! I must... They're dead! Damn it, Vasily! Help me!
Maria, get the weapon! Paul, you and Michael, get the fuselage door open and stand back! Flames!
Whatever we're doing, do it now!
Get me!
Everybody, now, follow me and jump, and God help us! Michael! Paul! Maria! For Capio!
Do you like Maria?
You want to talk about her now?
It's not as if we get a lot of downtime together.
Well, she's pretty, she's smart, obviously nuts about you.
You didn't answer my question.
What are you asking me? Is it all right because of what happened to Madison and the baby?
Do you stay where the other scientist stays, Svetlana?
I have a room there, of course. But I find my apartment in the city more conducive to thought.
I would like to see it very much. Might I do that? See it?
Yes, Comrade Marshall.
Nikolai, Svetlana. Nikolai. I don't suppose you are the sort of man who would choose suicide. No, death before dishonor certainly, but not suicide in a situation such as this.
That is correct, Comrade Marshall.
And what will you say at your trial, Vasily?
Comrade Marshall?
When you are asked why you, a major of the elite corps, its commander, why you allowed this wanted war criminal to go free, along with several other war criminals, why did you?
Comrade Marshall. His son saved my life. I met Dr. Rourke. He is a man of consummate bravery. He could not be the evil person he has been painted to be. I spoke with him. I fought beside him. He perhaps...
Hero Marshal, a courageous, honorable, and always truthful Vladimir Karamazov lied? See how far you get saying such a thing at a trial.
But...
The bridge is secure, and so are the torpedo rooms. Time's on our side now.
The ship is ours!
Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist, number 18, The Struggle. Available now in graphic audio.
This blood brothering between you, Prince Midalus, and you, Chieftain Brunhilde, will be the first in over a decade. You are not to harm the Shagath in no way, not even at the cost of your own life. Not that you could bring harm to the great beast anyway. Not even if you brought fine weapons in there with you. This is a test of your courage, not your warrior skills, and a test of your trust in each other. If either of you fails, then you both will surely die, and horribly. Are you prepared to begin?
What are you about, Elf? Are you going to tell me or not?
You take care, Bradwarden. On the South Road, I heard rumors of the Rosy Plague.
Oh, by the demons, you say?
I know not if there's any truth to those words. More likely, they were the utterances of a gossiping fool and nothing more. But I can ill afford to take the chance, any chance, of bringing the plague back to my people. Know that if the land becomes ill with plague, the Tuelalfar will secure our borders, and none will leave for many years. Farewell.
It is the plague! It is confirmed, my king! The Rosy Plague! What are we to do?
What can we do? Lock our doors fast and tight.
Oh, but where are you then? You've not been out of your walls in days! In weeks! Are you just to sit in there and let us all die then? Are you just to stand on your walls and shoot us dead if we come too close? And you're calling yourself the folk of God? But you're just a pack of scared dogs, you are!
Join with us before all the world has fallen into darkness. Help us put the church aright and thus end the misery of the plague.
You believe the plague to be a punishment from God?
On those who have forsaken the truth.
Absurd.
Obvious. I see it, and they see it. We know the truth, and we know the source, and no edicts from Father Abbot Agrangere will sway us from that path.
You risk the wrath of Father Abbot Agringer and all the masters of St. Mirabel.
And you, Brother Glendonhook, risk the wrath of Marcalo de Unaro. Which of us, then, do you believe in the worst situation?
You have gone mad.
As much has been said of many prophets. If you try to stop us, you may prove victorious, but I warn you that I will come for your throat first and foremost.
Experience the latest chapter of the Demon Wars saga in graphic audio. Don't miss Mortalis Part 2. Available now.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.